Ladies and gents, boys and girls, it is The Boys, episode 5. We gotta go now. With me, as always, is Sam Adams.
How you doing, Mose?
I am doing really well. And I gotta say, this episode was really, really good for me. I got a lot out of it.
Well, you know what? Girls get it done.
They do get it done. And we got to see Gay Maeve on film. And it's, you know, the basically blackmailing and just general discontent of Homelander to push Maeve into, I don't know, where she's just under control. I didn't know she needed to be.
Yeah, she seems like a pretty good soldier of the Seven. Like, she doesn't seem to buck. She seems to do what he says. So I don't know what this punishment is, because I don't know if maybe he has a thing for her and he's mad that she does not, or if he's just being a dick.
Well, there was some allusion to the fact that maybe they were together at some point.
Yeah, I think that there was, when there was a flashback in season one, there was a point where, like, he had his arm around her and they were together. And obviously he's very jealous, because she tells that story in one of the first couple episodes about him taking the casting director and beating him to death or something like that. I don't remember.
Yeah, something like that. I remember something little in there. But, you know, it seemed like this was all in an effort for Homelander to consolidate the Seven and, like, basically make loyal members. And A-Train, well, couldn't pull his weight. He's out. And it seems like he's really trying to make sure everyone is in line.
Yeah, he really seems to be kind of lining up to make sure that he's got everyone on his side, either willingly or unwillingly. Like, even if he has to bribe him or have some dirt on him, he wants to have the power. You know, it's still this kind of internal power struggle at Vought.
And I gotta say, this season is chock full of backstory. And if you wanted to get into the mind and a little bit of the story of Butcher, episode 5 is a pretty good indicator of where Billy Butcher might have come from.
Yeah, and I thought that, you know, you've been talking about Mother's Milk's kind of backstory unfolding, and this was just, even just one line in this was that he goes, well, I know that you keep terror at your aunt's, so we thought we'd come check on you. And so it's like, okay, so he has to know him long enough to have known his dog and known that he has an aunt, and that's where he keeps it. You know, they probably know each other since before Becca was even taken. So it's kind of one of those things where you go, wow, from one little line of dialogue, I just learned all this information about both these different characters.
Okay, so let's go forward and backward kind of at the same time. So Butcher is basically in a bad place. His wife wouldn't come with him because of her son. And Butcher is looking to become damaged by basically starting a fight and realizing that I don't have anything to live for. At the same time, I'm not going to kill myself, but I am going to leave. I'm going to Argentina, is what he tells Huey. Huey basically transmits all this information about being a canary to Mother's Milk. Mother's Milk somehow knows where they're going to be. And I don't know where Argentina comes from, but obviously it's, you know, it's like Butcher going to the high grass or the tall grass. They all seem to know where these retirement locations are going to be.
Yeah, and that's probably just like a joke where he's like, yeah, I'm going to go to Argentina like Hitler did, you know, kind of thing like that. So maybe it's even just a little bit of a kind of a nod.
A wink and a nod.
The, you know, these Nazi kind of ties that they're alluding to throughout the season.
Yeah. We also, you know, as this episode's kind of interesting in that it follows basically our boys segmented, you know, and everyone's kind of going and doing their own thing. Kimiko is, well, she's doing wet work. And at the same, this is probably one of the more brutal kills that you're going to see. But meanwhile, Frenchie's been following her the whole time. And if you've ever wanted to see somebody's face get ripped off, this is the show for you, because she does it. And it is about one of the more brutal kills besides Black Noir.
Yeah, that was intense. And it just kind of reminded me of Kumiko's like introduction from season one.
Yes.
When she rips through a couple of those guys and she gets to the last one and he just panics and pulls out his gun and shoots himself. And Huey is like, oh my God. And it's kind of one of those things where it's like, oh, once you've seen what she could do, you know, a quick seppuku, a quick shot to the head that seems way, way less worse than letting her tear you apart. So.
Well, and in this one, you know, it's kind of the last kill. But it's funny you mentioned that, because she shoves the gun into his skull, which yeah. is not how guns are intended to be used, but it did the trick.
Yeah, I didn't realize that at first until I saw Frenchie walk in and look at it, and I was like, oh, that is just gross.
Yeah, and Frenchie's not happy with this, obviously. He's in love. Or, you know, I don't know if he is necessarily in love, but he does care about her quite a bit.
Yeah, I think that they're kind of kindred spirits from that season one, where he realizes that they had similarly like rough childhoods, that, mm-hmm. you know, where they were forced to be someplace they didn't want to be. And so I think he really feels like a bond with her that he doesn't quite, you know, he obviously, you know, season one, he's kind of making fun of Mother's Milk for having one like lady. And mm-hmm. he's like, I go to bed with somebody different all the time. I'm never lonely. And now I think he's finally kind of found that person that it's not about going to bed. It's about sharing each other's experiences and getting to know each other. And he's frustrated because she has this, you know, the secret language that she won't teach him. And it's obviously she knows some English and is able to communicate a little, like she's able to understand what they're saying a little bit. Mm-hmm. So, and I remember in the first episode, they showed her writing like boy and girl and kind of learning English words. So she can communicate a little bit. So I see why he's frustrated, because he's just like, teach me your language so we can talk, because I feel like we have a lot to talk about.
Yeah. I wonder if she is using, because I don't know ASL, but is there such a thing as Chinese ASL?
Yeah, I actually looked this up, and there are different sign languages for different languages. And I believe in the second or third episode, I think when he's on the boat with the boys and Frenchie goes to kind of talk to her brother, he says they created their own language to be able to speak to each other that nobody else could understand. So I think when they're speaking to each other, they might even be speaking in their own kind of like dialect or something.
Okay, that makes sense.
Or maybe the sign language, it was their own language they made up, and that they were just he was speaking, you know, Cantonese or whatever.
Well, the things that you, the listener, could fill us in on if you are so inclined. So, Butcher goes to the tall grass, goes to Argentina. We don't know exactly where this is. However, Huey and MM, find him at his aunt's place, and instead, you know, Butcher's like, I'm out of here, I'll take Terror, my dog, out of here, and I'm leaving. And he catches a glimpse in a mirror, of a side view mirror, that our old friend Black Noir is out on the kill mission, and he's hanging out on top of a roof just waiting for his moment to strike. And I really gotta say, if you're a guy of a certain age, like, everything about Black Noir just exhilarates me in a Snake Eyes kind of way. Like, this is the kind of missions that I ran with my Snake Eyes guys. And it was just so fun to watch Black Noir just kind of waiting in the wind.
Yeah, like I looked forward to it, because I've kind of enjoyed when the boys actually have to take on a soup. You know, we've seen them, you know, take on the deep. We've seen them take on, you know, actually beat Translucent, you know, and it just kind of highlights how impossible it is to actually do anything against some of these people. And, you know, even though that they've got bombs blowing up, I love that it should have been the first clue that the ant was not a legit with the taffy room was that when he started asking for all the bomb materials, she was just like, yeah, right this way.
Yeah, no problem.
And got so it. Just like, you know, he's littered with, you know, nails and shrapnel and everything. And he's just like, I'm still here ready to kill everybody. And you know how it really takes kind of something other than brawn to get him to stop.
Yeah. And before we get any really super deep, there's a couple other things we got to hit on. One, number one is the Deep is now married. So he's on a redemption tour, but really the B plot, if I'm going to try to map it, is the fact that Homelander did a little bit of overspray with his laser beam eyes while he was on killing super terrorists. I mean, villains.
Yeah. Like I love the things about the Deep that you mentioned was it's on extra. They say it was an intimate ceremony and yet there's TV cameras there and he's wearing his costume while he's putting cake in his fiance or now wife's mouth and everything. And it just kind of seemed like he was, you know, having his Tom Cruise on the couch moment kind of thing.
Oh, totally. Totally, yeah. Reminiscent. I really thought he was going to have a costume upgrade where his gills were exposed. I'm waiting for that.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
It's coming. It's got to be coming. I mark it. Mark it now.
Yeah. And that commercial that he was in was so... I thought that this was a lot of great commentary hidden in this episode. I mean, obviously the beginning where they're doing the filming of the movie is making fun of both DC and Marvel. I mean, the dialogue of... these new Joss rewrites really sing.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, they're making fun of
man.
But they weren't afraid to take Marvel to task either because they're doing that whole girls get it done scene where they're kind of like, yeah, you guys just put all the girls in a scene. Like, don't act like don't pat yourselves on the back too hard. Like, kind of thing. So,
yeah. For as many people that loved, and, you know, I think we're of that audience that, you know, we saw Endgame. We know what we saw. And, whether, I don't know, depending on how your whole perspective on things, I don't want to offend you, but at the same time, we know why these scenes exist. And I think what I really like about The Boys is it's never afraid to say, hey, you know that scene existed, right? Here's why. And it's fun to have that and to not take things so serious.
Yeah, because I think that even if I love Endgame, I
sure,
you know, I'm a Marvel nerd, so
of course.
I will you know apologize for most of any little things that people want to argue with that stupid movie about. But at the same time, yeah, like I think that Endgame and Infinity War had the same idea, and one did it well and one didn't. In Infinity War, it's Black Widow and Scarlet Witch and I'm failing on the Wakandan lady that was in the
shaved head.
Yeah, that where they're all fighting together, where it's just three of them, and they're all working together and get the job done, and it was cool, and it wasn't like shoehorn. Whereas like the Endgame one, it's literally like they got every girl on one side of the battlefield all of a sudden. It was just like, why you know? I get why people were like, I thought it was cool for a moment, but in the moment of it, but I get why people are just kind of like, that was kind of shoehorned in there. So,
yeah, I mean, like,
and that's all VOD is shoehorning people into roles, and you know. Making they're like it's amazing how much control they have over this world, because even when Butcher is on the phone with Huey at the supermarket, you see he grabs an orange juice from a stand that says Vought Fresh Farms.
Oh, and interestingly enough, the frozen peas that Butcher puts on his face have Homelander on it.
Yeah, you notice every time they're in a store, there's almost always a Homelander, a Maeve, or an A-Train standee somewhere. I mean, the advertising of just the heroes is always all over the place.
Yeah, it reminds me of Star Wars cuties, the little oranges, when Star Wars was making its big comeback. It was literally everywhere. I was like, really, oranges?
Yeah, I remember I saw Avengers Ziplocs somewhere, and I was like, what is this pushing? Who is this helping? What is this doing?
Which actually brings the B plot to a larger, bigger A plot over two episodes, which is Homelander needing the help of the one person that he thinks he doesn't need the help, which is Stormfront. And now, let me not bury the lead, because I need to say this. We've talked about this offline, but I want to say it so that everybody hears it. There is a comic series called Martial Law by O'Neill. I can't remember the other person involved, but Martial Law is a fantastic little short run comic. I highly recommend it. It's basically, the premise is superheroes were used to fight a great war. The problem was that when these superheroes came back home, they really were disenfranchised, didn't know what to do. And, you know, they used their powers, not for great, but they're, you know, they, you had a segmented population of these super soldiers that, you know, think of them as like, you know, Vietnam vets, but with superpowers. And so that, you know, if they went down the, you know, not the right side, they would start to use their powers for evil. Martial law is there to basically kill them on sight. Think of them as kind of a Judge Dredd, but in more tight leather, as a leather cop. And so without bearing the lead, the boys directly, and I will go on record without have reading the comic, that it probably aped off of the amazing sex scene floating between two supers. So when Homelander and Stormfront make the beast with two backs, you can say that they got that directly from Martial Law, and I highly recommend checking it out.
I remember that was part of the first season, first episode, when he takes Huey to the soups bar and there's people floating and fooling around in the air. And I was like, oh, that's crazy. I was like, I wish you could have seen more of that. And then boom, the scene pops up. So, this Homeland, you know what? And I noticed, I didn't think about it until you were just talking now, that I feel like this was the first episode where we've really seen Homelander say anything racist. And it's in the first scene when he gets in trouble for accidentally lasering that innocent African boy. And he was like, oh, what? Yeah. They're all starving, but now one of them's got a fucking cell phone or something like that.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, look at, she's planting those seeds in him. And the guy that wants to be Mr. America, everybody loves me, is now, I mean, granted, this is behind closed doors where he's his asshole self, but I still noticed, I was like, oh, look at, like, hire somebody who never really showed that he cared about race before, now all of a sudden dropping these little lines here that, you know, like somebody has been kind of indoctrinating him, kind of thing.
And to Stormfront's credit, she is a dastardly passive just hater. I mean, yeah, she gets into it with A-Train, and it is so undercut. Like, A-Train sees what she's about, but like nothing she says is so overt that if you recorded it, you could like use it against her. But like, it's there, it's palpable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like it is. She's basically looking at him and being like, I know you know what I'm saying for reals, but I'm not actually saying it. So what are you going to say to me? Yeah. You know, and she is just very conniving, and she's very strategic with how she moves. Like, it's almost like the fact that she is 70 or 80 years old is being used to an advantage here, because she knows how people work and operate and knows how to manipulate people a little bit better than, you know, somebody that's only 20 or 30 or 40.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of her history, she was a member of the Church of the Collective. And apparently the whole thing used to be a lot different in her when she was in it.
Mm-hmm. Before they started letting in the garbage people.
Yeah. Yes. The garbage people.
You know,
speaking of the Church of Collective, mm-hmm. that advertisement that The Deep is doing, they bring in a character. I don't know the name is Alistair something, but he's being played by a name brand actor. I can't remember who it is. But I can only assume this is not the last time where the church is going to be a bigger element. I have a feeling.
Yeah, that's obviously coming to play, especially the fact that Starlight used to be a part of it. There's definitely some under the tables kind of manipulation stuff going on here.
Because, she was a member of church?
Yeah, because so that's what she said. That A-Train watches the commercial and he tosses the iPad aside and kind of makes fun of it. And she goes, to be a joke. She's like, yeah, I used to. And so that the fact that she's connected to that as well really makes me go, okay, what's happening here?
Before you get an email, you said Starlight, not Stormfront. So I wanted to make sure.
Yeah, Stormfront. Sorry. Yeah, they have similar names. And
yeah, so we crush all that.
Tough. So, you know, one thing I also wanted to point out from the beginning when they call him up, when they're showing Homelander that footage and he's like, all right, call a press conference. I noticed that as scared as Ashley is a Homelander, she's still like, gives him Mr. Edgar's directions and seems like she's more scared of Mr. Edgar. And the fact that like Black Noir is doing under the table stuff, you know, trying to go kill Billy Butcher for him and all this, you know, it kind of makes me go, okay, there's something interesting about Mr. Edgar that we don't know, because I know he runs Vought. That's all well and good, but there has to be something else that maybe there's something that makes him so powerful, I feel like.
Well, and didn't he, if I'm not mistaken, Edgar basically planted Stormfront into here, which on, if we're going to be talking, you know, race and that kind of ethos, it seems odd. Why would he plant, you know, this basically Nazi superhero?
Yeah, that is weird because
you just got muted.
Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Okay. So, it said something about they've been moving her around like a Catholic priest. So I don't feel like they're doing that if they don't know who she is and what she's about. So I wonder, does that mean that he's a Nazi? Does that mean that maybe he isn't who we think he is? Like, who knows? Maybe he's a robot that's acting under the influence of the original Mr. Vought. You know, I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of mystery surrounding that whole thing. And that I like that there's, you know, there's no real, it has to be A, B, or C. It could kind of just be like whatever they.
At a certain level, you know, think about like this, you know, people get very upset with, you know, individuals that become elite. Okay. And so, when you reach that kind of echelon, the idea of being I'm careful about how I'm saying, but it's like being a race traitor. Like I am above all of this. So what I do is I do it for me, not for, you know, what I stand for, you know, a level that you can't understand. You know, it's like getting fuck you money. It's like, I don't really care.
Mm, yeah. Oh, you know what? And then, I feel, you know, it's funny watching this episode. I didn't take a lot of notes, but now as I'm going through my notes, I'm like, a lot of little things happened. Like, finding out that Butcher had a little brother named Lenny.
Okay, let's go ahead and bring it up. Got to. That's good.
We find out that Huey is a spitting image of Lenny, and we find out that he had a little brother that was kind of his North Star, his canary in a coal mine, if you will.
There we are.
And you know, they really kind of put a bow on the fact that he seemed to need that, and even MM saw that he needed that. That's what makes me think maybe he even knew Lenny and maybe knew them back in the day. But we never get to find out what happened to Lenny, just that he's dead, because that's when Black Noir makes
We don't know that.
Well, she said, God rest his soul. So, yeah, but I mean, I guess you could say that if somebody's just like gone, but I feel like usually
my girls were keying in on that quite a bit. They were like, I bet he's not dead.
Maybe. I don't know. That's interesting because I mean, it's not like he was a hot mess when he was with Rebecca, even though she seems to think that he's a little unhinged, but I don't know. Maybe I got the feeling that he was dead, but I also think that they really left it open as to what happened to him as well.
Now, is Stormfront trying to turn Starlight?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know if she's trying to turn her or if it's maybe like the same thing with Homelander, like, hey, I have something on you now, so you're going to be doing what I say, or else I let everybody know that you're the person that leaked all of this stuff.
Yeah, and so, you know, obviously, if you're listening to this and you haven't watched the episode, shame on you, but I understand it because there are podcasts I listen to. I never watch the show, but I like to listen. So basically Stormfront gets Starlight's mother to the set. And because of the way Compound V has come out, we're actually getting a little bit of backstory about how the parents dealt with and what they did in order to, you know, get their kid into, let's call it the Compound V program, the super program. And what that meant to a parent.
I think that it's going to end up tying into, I did not write down what it was. What did Starlight find on the email? It's called like Saving Grace or.
It's Sage something or other. It's like, it's
Sage Grove or something like that. Yeah.
So. Now I did a little bit of research. And I didn't mean to. It was just I was looking up the cast, and Lamplighter is in there.
Yeah, I already knew that he was playing Lamplighter, and so when I saw him on screen playing with the lighter, I was like, oh, okay, this must be the guy. So I was like, oh, that's interesting because he was technically retired last year, and that's why he was stepping down out of the seven. So to find him at like a facility with scrubs on, doing some dirty work for Stormfront. That's very interesting. And I wonder if maybe this is, we're going to find out that they're using somebody to get to make the Compound V, or I feel bad because I definitely saw a preview for next week. So I know a little bit about what next week's about, but I don't want to get into that on this episode for people that don't like to watch the thing. But I feel like just from this, I maybe go, what is this? Cause she's like, he's 17. He's a hero. Just look at it like that or something like that. And so I took it
like he was in prison or a mental facility.
Yeah. That's what I mean is that I took it as like, maybe they're hiding somebody or maybe they're using somebody for something. I'm not sure. Like maybe that's why she's so young, is that they're hiding somebody in a mental facility and like stealing his bot blood and then using it to make her younger. Cause that's his powers or something. I don't know. I'm just throwing out random, like kind of skepticism or not skepticism, but
you're prognosticating.
Yeah. I'm just kind of throwing something out there. Cause it's like, I feel like that's what's great about the show is cause it can go a lot of different directions and you don't necessarily know like, one of the things I hate about shows that instantly turns me off is when I can tell you either what's going to happen next or even worse, what the person's going to say next.
It's funny because when I watch with my girls, and my girls are 14, almost 15, and they often, and believe me, I couldn't be more proud of them, when they can actually say the dialogue just before the actor does, and it's nearly the same line or identically the same line. And I don't know if that's because we've just watched enough stuff or that stuff has been watered down to such a level that it's all telegraphed. And this episode does have a lot of putting a bow on it and is very telegraphed, but there are some things that are a surprise.
Mm-hmm. Well, like even just
like the power of Stormfront. I mean, she can take Homelander's hot beams right to the boobies, and it doesn't seem to do a whole lot.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I always thought of Homelander as he's the baby that we experimented on and we gave him too much V and we created Superman, and now we kind of make people with a little bit less powers is kind of what it seemed like. But now here she comes in and she's almost equally as strong, and they're throwing each other around, and you know, she can take the laser beams, and that's what makes me wonder, like, man, she's so old. Is it just that maybe they used to make the heroes too powerful, and so they they dialed it back a little bit, or maybe that's what made me kind of think maybe she's stealing someone's youth or someone's powers from someone else, because I haven't seen anybody else that has been able to take that laser without anything other than, you know, catastrophe.
Oh, geez. Think about if this is all dealing with like adrenochrome and stuff like that. Ugh, man, this is going to get too real.
Oh, man. Well, that's what's crazy about the show is that for as surreal and violent as it is, it really does try and make a lot of, it's making fun of a lot of what we go through. I mean, whether it's, you know, corporations taking over too much, or whether it's making fun of, you know, DC for having sepia tone movies.
Or conspiracy theories.
Yeah, which I feel like this show makes you want to come up with conspiracy theories for what Vought is up to besides what we know. Because that's one thing that the Congressman Newman, a.k.a. AOC, says during the episode, that she's like, what don't we know that they're doing? And like, that's one of the things I've been kind of saying in my back of my head is that, you know, if they're paying parents to dose their children, there's a lot of children out there without parents. Like, how many orphans have they experimented on? Or like, you know, just things like that, where I wonder what other evil stuff they're doing that they almost are like, oh, if they're worried about Compound V, good, that's the least of our worries.
Well, and I bring you back to season one, where one of the craziest weapons that's been used is a baby with laser eyes.
Diabolical. Now, that was one of the things that was just like, I loved that about season one, when he's shooting that laser all over the place. And yeah. I was like, this is the version of Cyclops I want to see right here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, by the way, this episode had one of the trailer moments I was waiting for, and it was a psych out, because in the trailer, I remember seeing Homelander lasering a crowd of people and just being like, oh my God, I can't wait to see what brings that on. And as the scene was building up, I'm like, I can't believe he's about to kill all these protesters. And then when he did it, and it was just kind of
a daydream. A daydream we all have. We all have this kind of feeling where, what if I just lost it? What would happen?
Mm-hmm. And not all of us have the capability of just taking down a crowd in a matter of seconds by looking at it. So it was really intense. And the whole time it was happening, I'm like, this is going to change the show so drastically. And part of me was like, is this a-? And then when it switched back, I was like, God dang it, they tricked me. I was like, that's what I get for trying to break down a trailer.
Well, and I was so, you know, I think anybody who has listened to stuff that specifically that I record, I get very attached to good villains, fleshed villains, villains that I sympathize with. And honestly, I start to sympathize with Homelander in that, you know, he's dealing with, you know, his popularity, his points, and that went completely wrong. He was told not to say anything, and he did it anyway. And it completely went sideways on him. And I mean, and like the emotional, like taxation on him. And he's like, what am I going to do? Well, I could just kill everybody, but that's probably not the best thing.
Yeah. The scene of him watching everybody take him down on like the news channels while he's like maniacally laughing was good. But yeah, I know what you mean about like, there are times where I do feel a little sad for him. Cause when you think about it, it's like he was raised in a lab with this kind of asshole scientist as a wannabe dad. And at some point they passed him on to Madeline, and she was his, you know, closest thing he had to a mom. And, you know, so no wonder he has some messed up things. And part of it is too, is that he thinks he's better than everybody else. So when he goes like, I'll handle it, and it doesn't go well, all he is frustrated that he didn't listen to the legal people. They knew the better way to handle it, and that he couldn't do it his way and make it right.
And the scary thing is, you know, he breaks down and he literally loses it quite a bit. And he's at his rock bottom when he goes to talk to Stormfront. It's just, there's something about him, this brokenness that is very interesting to me.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think part of it is that you see that while he thinks he's better than everybody, he needs everybody else to think that too. And so you see this like desperate need for approval. I mean, like, he's so happy when he goes up to her. He's like, I'm up 3 points. Yeah. And then like, she's sitting there just like, who gives a shit? Yeah. But it's kind of like, it does make you kind of feel bad for him, because you realize not only was he raised in a lab, he was raised by a corporation. So, mm-hmm. you know, things like happiness and finding your joy go out the window. He's all about the numbers, them stock buyback purchase prices. Like, he's, you know, even like you see him directing the movie, he doesn't seem to care about anything, but yet he's there with getting playback and, you know, doing rewrites of how everybody will view him and his yeah. compatriots and everything.
Okay, so Sam, let me change complete gears with you. I want to ask you, what should we care about A-Train?
Well, you know, it might be Dawn of the Seven, but looks like it's sunset on A-Train. I love those kind of things of him trying to do his little power plays, and just how I feel like it was very like on the nose of probably how these big budget movies are made, you know, especially the worst ones, is that, yeah, there's a director there, but he doesn't have any real power, and you can try and take it to corporate, but they've probably got a thing that they can do to make you do what you want to do. You know, like, heck, even the news, what's going on with Ray Fisher and Warner Brothers right now is kind of like shows you that in the heat of the moment, they can put some pressure on you and make you go stand in your stupid CGI pajamas and say the line, and doesn't mean that you were necessarily happy about it or wanted to do it or any of that. And so I thought that was pretty good how it illustrated, and just how Vought really covers their ass. Like, he thought he was getting away with doing a little Compound V, and there's Ashley ready to terminate his benefits and take away all his retirement concerts. And so
it sounded like more than anything, they were basically like, you're going to lose all that and your life because we'll make it look like you had a heart attack.
Oh yeah. I mean, like, they have not been afraid to retire somebody permanently before, like they did with Popclaw. I mean, granted, that was more Homelander that ordered that, but I don't think that Vought is, you know, Vought's not afraid to drop a body to keep something out of the newspapers.
So does A-Train have a story after this episode?
Well, I was thinking that means that he might be helping out the boys down the line. I wonder if maybe that might be his like turnaround, is that he steals something for him and has a heart attack and dies, but it's a key to like saving the season or the series or something along those lines.
Interesting. All right. Okay.
Well, you got me thinking redemption when you said you thought Homelander was going to have a long path to redemption. I was like, God, I don't know where his is. But then it made me think about A-Train this. And I was like, okay, well, the Seven did him dirty. And yeah, he might be the 20th fastest person, but he's faster than everybody else. So he might be able to be an asset down the line, especially since Huey saved him.
Huey and Starlight. What if he joined the boys?
Yeah, that's what I mean. I could see that that both, you know, Starlight's already a double agent. What if he decided to help him out? And just, you know, especially if they get any more Compound V's, like, let's do this.
And we do get an interesting friction between Starlight and Stormfront.
Yeah, and I thought there was two interactions that interest me. The fact that Stormfront was over chopping it up with her mom. And I love that her mom's like, hey, I'm just on set at this movie you're at. You don't have to talk to me or anything, you know? Like, I texted you to let you know I was coming, but you didn't answer. And so don't worry about it. But I'm just going to talk to your teammate over here about our personal lives and our problems we're having. And it was almost like Stormfront was kind of putting on that like, oh, shucks, I just want to help out my teammate's mom. And meanwhile, she was basically kind of confirming her thoughts of like, oh, so look at Annie's so mad about Compound V, she's not talking to her mom anymore. Let me go do a little extra digging. And so yeah. It shows you how she puts on that kind of public face to get her dirty work done. And
she didn't deny that she was Liberty, which I thought was interesting. I thought that was going to be kind of a super bluff, that she'd be like, I don't even know what you're talking about. But goes to show that, confirmed, Liberty is Stormfront.
Yeah, and I don't think that I think that while maybe there might be, you know, things like that lady who confessed to seeing her brother die because of Liberty, there might be some of that around, but I don't know that Liberty is less necessarily known as like this racist hero. All they said is like, oh, it's this hero from the 70s. They didn't get the whole race aspect until they talked to that witness. So I wonder if that's part of the reason she's like, I don't care. I'll just be like, look at, I was around for a while. I quit. I came back. I'm doing it under a new name. Get over it.
And I do want to say one thing. I was reading, you know, obviously I put, the boys into my Google News stuff, so I could just kind of grab information as it comes. The actor that plays Stormfront, I know was getting heat over playing this, you know, Nazi racist character. And for some reason, I don't know why this has happened. And well, I do know why it's happened, but everyone for some reason needs to apologize because they're playing a character maybe I need to say this, that, you know, these people that are in these TV and movies, they're playing pretend. They're professional pretenders. And so because you are playing a role doesn't make you that. So calm the fuck down. Let's just put it as bluntly as I can. That,
yeah,
you know, they're just actors. They're pretenders. They don't believe what they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you have to realize there's people out there that call the phone number on the screen when somebody takes a cell phone call. So, you know, there's people that take it a little too seriously. And, you know, I was surprised because I saw that she got some crap just for the first episode where she called the guy yellow. And I was like, whoa, like people are already jumping on her. Like, they realize she didn't write this, right? Like, and you know, she gets that she's a bad person. Like, she's not, right. she's not going out being like, oh, guys, hey, I think Stormfront's got some really good ideas. No, she's out there being like, I'm the bad guy this season. You know, like it's kind of crazy that people can take that and not, you know, realize like, oh, I wonder if this was hard for her to do just because, you know, like I don't go saying any, you know, even just trying to repeat a word sometimes can trip me up when it comes to racial slurs. So
sure.
I feel like as an actor, it's probably hard to be able to say it and not feel icky and go like, oh, hey, let me get another take because I made a face when I said it. I need to have a stone cold face when I look at A-Train and tell him he's a garbage person, you know, kind of thing. It's like, so it's like, maybe it's just that she's doing such a good job that people are like, you are acting, right? You aren't like into this, but I feel like, you know, hey, at some point you have to give people a break. They're playing a role to tell a story, you know, that it's obviously trying to reflect what's going on in today's society. And there's a lot of ugliness going on and that's what she is. So just, you know, you can't be mad at the bad guy for being too bad. It's
right.
It's a silly, silly thing. It's, you know, I don't know what people expect from her, but she's just playing a role. And the only thing I'm mad about her is the thing I tell, you know, we talked about offline was that I listened to her on a podcast and I know exactly how long she's contracted for. And I don't want to spoil it for anybody because that might spoil some of the season for people. But I was like, hey, you know, you could have kept that part a secret. Like I liked that. She was very delightful on the podcast I listened to, but I was like, yeah, I didn't need to know that. Thank you.
Yeah. That really worries me. Like the fact that you know these things. And like, I'm thinking to myself, okay, so based on, I can infer, and based on what you just said, I'm just going to expand out. And if you're spoiled, I'm sorry, but it sounds as if she's only contracted for at least the season, maybe only part of the season. No, how many episodes we got? 10?
Yeah, I think we're getting 10.
Or we're halfway through. I mean, does she get killed? I don't know. This seems strange to me. I would really like to see her, you know, fleshed out for the rest of the season at least, and have, you know, Homelander kill her, but I don't know.
Yeah, we shall see. So yeah, I do. She didn't give any other real big spoilers and they were on the Watch podcast, which is a very like, talk about what's going on in the industry type of podcast. So I don't like begrudge her for doing it. So it was just one of those things where I'm like, oh, wait. Oh, so dang it. Now I know at least this about the season. So, oh well, but it's also like, I trust this show enough that I think by next year we will have, you know, a half dozen new characters and interesting plot lines that I will be just as interested to follow. And that it's the kind, like I said, it's the kind of show that burns through plot. Whereas, you know, something on the CW or Netflix might take season or episode 6 to get to, they're doing it in episode 2. And, yeah. You know, I really, you know, even if something gets wrapped up earlier than you want or later than you want or whatever it is, I feel like they know what they're doing. Amazon has already renewed it for a third season. They know how many seasons they want to go. So they're not just trying to pump out stupid things that they don't want to do. They have a plan. So I'm all for people that have a plan to end their show after, you know, the Game of Thrones incident. So,
oh, it's so nice when they have a plan.
Heck, even the Joker has a plan. Come on, guys. Ah,
Agent of Chaos. Ooh, so good. Okay, well, I can't even predict what will happen. The only thing that I'm latching on to is the fact that Billy now basically bluffed his way that he has pictures of Homelander's son, and that got Mr. Edgar to back off a little bit. I'm assuming he's going to have to get those pictures so that the bluff becomes a reality. So the boys are back, but at what level? I don't even know where this goes. I'm excited about the next episode because I just don't know where it can go.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I think is brilliant about this show coming out weekly is that it gives us a second to watch an episode. Like, I wouldn't say this is my favorite episode of the season, but it was good, and it lets us kind of break it down and enjoy it and just think about what happens next and, you know, extends the conversation as opposed to, you know, there was times when those, you know, that last season of Daredevil came out and you're like, God, I got 3 days to binge this before the podcast starts. There's podcasts start dropping about it and the spoilers start coming.
And people were like rage bombing this thing because they're doing weekly. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me.
Yeah, I feel like at the end of the day, you know, if you really want to be reviewing stuff online, review it for the right reasons. Like, I hate when you find out that something's getting review bombed because they didn't like that they changed the race of this actor, or they don't like that. It's like, okay, well, you know, write a letter and be over it. And, you know, this is how Disney's doing it. And yeah, that's nice that Netflix turned us all into binge monsters for a while. But if you look at how the shows that have lasting impacts, you know, Game of Thrones out, you know, part of the reason it does so much better than, say, Stranger Things is because everybody watches Stranger Things in a weekend, and you couldn't go, yep, like, oh, you know what my favorite episode was this one, whereas, like,
couldn't tell you. I could
tell you, like, a Game of Thrones episode that you love and be like, oh, how about the, you know, the one where he kills the half hand or, you know, just whatever. You'd be like, you know, I feel like Stranger Things, it's just like, oh, I like this character, and I think this person's fun, and that one scene at the end was cool. And, you know, you can't really break it down as opposed to this, where you're really getting to live with these characters for 2 months. And I
liken it to this. You know, it would be like me sharing with you a pack of Bubblicious. It is fantastic. But at the end of the day, it's going to be gone in, let's say, 30 minutes. And that's it. If I took you every week to go get something to eat and have a meal, that gives me sustenance and conversation and a moment. And that's why we like shows. It's not just to scorch the earth, watch 8 hours and be done with it, because you're not going to be satisfied. It's going to be over and done with. Stretch it out.
I agree. Like, I think it's neat when people will, you know, like, I know that like Jason will do the slow binge, and I've kind of become a big believer in that. I just started watching Schitt's Creek, and I'll watch like 2 episodes and then give it a break because I don't want to just buzz through it as fast as possible. I'm like, okay, well, this thing's been winning Emmys like crazy, so let's
see. Yeah, it's not a race.
Yeah, and it's kind of one of those things, it's like, there's nobody I'm dying to talk to about it or anything. It's just one of those kind of put it on and forget about it shows. But, you know, I think at the same time, it's nice to kind of just go at a slow pace. Like, don't, you don't need to, like, hammer into your veins. Like, as much as I did that first season of Daredevil, don't get me wrong, I watched it like an animal. Yeah. It's just because it was there. And 100%. I'm sure I would have done that with The Mandalorian, and I'm sure I would do that with any of these Marvel shows that are coming out. But I, you know, after I got in that pace of being like sitting there at work on Friday being like, oh, I can't wait to go home and watch The Mandalorian. You kind of go like, oh, cool. I watched this episode. You talk to your friends about it. Like, it just, and it's not like this thing where everybody else is watching it at a different time. And you don't know when somebody watched it. And then somebody finally watches it and wants to talk to you about it. And it's been 2 months since you binged it. And you don't remember what they're talking about. So
exactly.
This makes it so much more enjoyable.
Speaking of enjoyment that I've been having, there's another show that I've been watching on the side. When I got my iPhone, I was able to get a year subscription of Apple Plus. Now, I really, frankly, there wasn't much that I even cared about. I know that there was that Jason Momoa show, never watched it. And then all of a sudden, this show came out of nowhere. And I highly recommend that. And it comes out weekly. It's not a binger. It's called Ted Lasso. And there are only a few shows that do this to me where I can simultaneously be in tears and smiling and laughing at the same time. One is Ricky Gervais' Afterlife on Netflix, now on season 2. I highly recommend that. But on Apple Plus, Ted Lasso. I cannot recommend the show enough. Even if you don't care about soccer, it doesn't matter. The show has so much fucking heart. It will just make you feel better having watched it.
Wait, I have heard good things, and I saw that the boys over at Biff did an episode on Ted Lasso. So I don't have Apple TV, but my parents do. So I obviously probably have a password I can use to
there you go.
Get it on in there. But yeah, I'll have to check it out. So I haven't seen that one yet.
Well worth it. It is completely opposite of The Boys, but it is well worth it. Well worth your time.
Hey, you can't watch the same stuff all the time. Sometimes you gotta cleanse the palate and
absolutely
turn on.
Feel good about yourself every now and again. And then every once in a while you gotta see a face get ripped off.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? There was one other big thing in this episode we didn't talk about, and that
all
was
right. That gotta was, do it now.
That was Maeve going to the book signing to see The Deep, and she pretty much said that she wants to take down Homelander, and that she wants to, I don't know why The Deep is so important. It's so funny to me that she's going to him for help and being like, hey, I will speak for you and speak up for you.
I don't think The Deep is important. I think she needs an ally.
She just needs numbers at this point then.
Yes. Yeah, she needs to get the numbers behind her.
Yeah, so that's interesting. There's a lot of factions here. It's like whatever Homelander's doing, is Stormfront using Homelander for a different agenda, or is she just supporting his? You know, there's A-Train. So there's a lot of divisiveness in the Seven right now. So I think that was interesting that it's like A-Train has a reason to be mad at everybody. Maeve is obviously furious with all this shoving her sexuality in the public, you know, kind of thing that she was not asking for. And, so there's a lot of people with grudges right now that I feel like it's working out well for the boys, even if they're not in the best of spots right now.
They are disruptors. That's their game. Well, and with that, we will see you next week for We Don't Know. So join the ride with us. We're having a great time watching it. And take your preconceived notions of what superheroes are and join us. And we'll see you next time.
Bye, everybody.